Hello, and welcome to The Gamers About Glory. I'm your host, Milo, and joining me is Ricky. Hello, mate.
Hi, mate. You okay?
Yeah, I'm all right. I should point out that we're recording this after the pod. Steph was with us, and there's a storm blowing in California at the moment, and we lost him. So, first things first, what do you think of the new intro music for The Gamers About Glory? That was our own mighty Ram. I'm just very pleased to be teased into each episode with Ram's nimble fingers. Well, there's a lot to get into this week. We had two games, with Wednesday's 3-2 win over Brentford being swiftly followed by the early kickoff on Saturday against Everton at Goodison Park. We're starting to look back at the 2-2 draw, plus we'll be talking, having a look at the January transfer window and how it ended up for us. So, Ricky, in a nutshell, what did you think of the Everton game?
I think we started well, which was promising, and I think a good start probably pretty much ended when I messaged the group to say that we had a great start, and it looked like we were like fast of thinking and we were too quick for them, blah blah blah. And then after that, Everton played their way into it, well, barged their way into it, should I say. And then it was end-to-end stuff, and I think some of that might be a symptom of the centre midfield's not quite sure where it's at and what it's doing at the moment. Second half, it looks like I wouldn't say we was necessarily in control, but we were kind of, it seemed quite comfortable again. Vicario didn't have much to do. And what he had to do was all aerial bombardment stuff from set plays, really. And that's what Everton offer. And they're quite good at it. And we succumbed to that at the very end, which is always hard to take. I mean, having said that, I mean, even the goal at the end, we made the first header. It's not like we didn't, you know, we didn't do anything sort of completely drastic. And that was it, really. It was like, it felt like 2 points lost. And judging by our managers, after match interview, he was downbeat about that as well.
I thought it was typical of a lot of our games, over the last few months, where it was very, very end to end. You know, I think because of the issues we've had with players being out and injuries and what have you, a lot of our games have been a bit basketball-y, and I don't think we really, apart from maybe 15 or so minutes at the beginning of the second half, we never really had a lot of control of the game. And what the difference was, Richie's in great form and we've got better players than them, but we just didn't have control of the game. And I think the reasons for that is, we've got injuries, we've got players coming back from injury, we've got players who've played too much, and because of that, we're just not exerting the control that we were earlier in the season. So yeah, I thought it was a bit of a frustrating game. All that told, I was feeling pretty comfortable, towards the end of the game, thinking we were going to be able to see it out. And yeah, just really disappointed with how it finished. Ricky, we were talking about that kind of transitional nature of the way we've been playing. And yeah, I mean, what do you think's going on there? Because it's definitely something that's been a feature recently.
Well, I think, as I say, I think we've got players coming back. And a lot of that revolves around our centre midfielders. And we're all kind of expecting almost players to come back and hit the ground running and be what they were. And I think that a lot of them are from long-term injuries as well. I mean, obviously, Bentancur had like a double injury in a way just as soon as he came back. And that was that's kind of quite weird, because in that game where he did come back at Villa, he was playing that kind of metronome controlling the game kind of six thing. And we all thought, he's hit the ground running. He's just straight back there. And that's why it's so galling when he got Matty cashed. But I'm not sure. It's just, and I think what you were saying about the games being a bit of kind of we attack, you attack basketball games. And I think I said this with LaCelso. I don't think we particularly like, no, not all of our players, but I think Bentancur particularly doesn't like that. I think he likes it to be moved up the pitch at a certain pace. And I don't mean slowly, but just in a more kind of controlled fashion. And that's certainly not happening. And I'm not sure whether that's because players are just not up to speed or whether teams are dragging. I mean, especially these two games we're going to talk about, they're certainly teams that will drag you into that kind of tear up kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think Højbjerg as a six is probably not exactly what you want if you're trying to control a game and have settled possession. We're missing Saar, who was so important with particularly with his off the ball work and ground covering and stopping snuffing stuff out early on and regaining possession when we'd lost it. Madison is coming back from an injury, and then I think if you look at the front three we've played starting this game, they're all players that are looking to attack space rather than receive the ball. So I think kind of combination of all of those things kind of lends itself to that. And we were playing quite a lot of long balls in this game, I think, in behind, obviously to try and release Werner and Johnson. But if the opposition regain possession there, then it's going to come straight back at you. And with Everton, it's going to come straight back you at at pace and distance, isn't it? Yeah. So I think that kind of lends itself, with both teams trying to do that a bit more, I think it lends itself to an end-to-end game. But I don't think it's what Ange wants to be doing. And I'm hoping that with, Basuma coming back from AFCON, Basuma and Sarr coming back from AFCON, and Sonny hopefully, back in good, good health soon, that helps change that. I think, if we've got a, Basuma, Sarr and Maddison midfield, then you'd hope that we'd start seeing kind of similar performances to we saw earlier in the season and start getting a bit more control there. And I think Bentancur will probably benefit from a bit of a rest and being a rotation player rather than having to start every game.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have to be a bit mindful of like the way we play is almost like, because I think sometimes we don't control games, but we dominate them. And I think there's a slight difference there, because we've all seen how a team can control a game, because obviously City can. And of course, we even controlled games under AVB, but it was obviously, we never went anywhere with it. It was the most boring football in the world. And you could say, well, we had possession, we controlled it. And I think we try and dominate games. And this was like this game, the first 10 minutes, we completely dominated them. And we've had that plenty of times this year. It's just, I'm not sure whether our expectations to sort of do that for the whole game is it's quite a demand, because the way we play with a lot of speed and a lot of, and more of our passes are lower percentage passes, aren't they? So in other words, and by definition, that means you're going to turn over possession because that trickier pass didn't come off or something like that. So to really dominate a team, I mean, I'm not saying it can't happen, because I think if the midfield molds itself and we get, our four of our best ones available and we can rotate them when we want, I think there's a potential there that we can once again, especially being backed up by like the five defenders we've got, including Vicario. I mean, you just think that that is going to end up being something quite special. But I don't think, but as I say, domination is different to that control and that. I mean, I am a bit, I mean, this is something I was going to talk to a bit later when we talk about Ange and stuff like that. I just wonder whether he's learning as he goes along, because he always says this team's got a lot to learn, but I think he might have something to learn about this league and whether he has, and I know he doesn't want to tweak things, but I think there might be moments in games where we have to manage it and we have to just get over the line. And it's not for a whole game at all. It could just be 20 minutes or something like this. Because if this team is capable of passing it around under pressure and in tight spaces when we're playing in other top parts of the game, I'm sure we can play it and pass it around quite comfortably if we're just looking to kill a bit of time. And I know, I 100% know he doesn't want to do that, but he might realise at some point, if I need to get the end result, i.e. success, then this league is a lot more unforgiving than other leagues he's been in before, if you see what I mean. Because if you let a team stay in a game and you turn over the ball in this league, the other team have got a really good chance of scoring because the quality is just higher. And also, if you lose points where you think you shouldn't got to, this is in the bigger picture, then other teams in the league will take your place in the table because, they're relentless as well. This is the thing. When I mean in the Scottish Premier League, let's say, you've got Rangers to worry about, you've got whatever, but you can probably afford to have the odd game, where you drew. And I just think I think Ange might learn that himself. He's not a stupid man, is he? He's intelligent as well. And I understand completely he wants to play the way he does, but it just makes me wonder whether he'll take a look at those things somewhere down the line and just think, if that costs us too much in some, because you can only drop so many points. It's just, it's a relentless league, really.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, Ricky. I mean, the test will be what happens when we get players returning over the next few weeks and we're able to rotate again. And the players who are coming back and regaining fitness. And Richie opened the scoring on 3 minutes and put us ahead again on 40, making it 9 goals in 8 games. How impressed with you have you been with him since he came back from his surgery?
Well, you can't argue with his goal return at the moment, and it really does. I mean, especially Saturday was almost like a typical game where Kane would just score those random chances out of nowhere, and you'd be so grateful that you had him. And Richie's, both his goals were amazing. I think, thinking back to the space he was in, I mean, we all know that Richie, he's, you know, he's an emotional guy and he wears his heart on his sleeve and that. And I think he probably had the double whammy because I think he had some mental health problems as well.
He had that
kind of problem with his agent. And also he had the surgery because he had something that was probably a bit similar to Skippy, which makes it really awkward to use your body how you want to. And both of them look to be, he's come out the other side of that. And each of them, if you've got one of them, can affect the other. So if he's good in both of those areas now, it's certainly showing in his game. I think he is moving a bit more freely. He seems, any striker, goals equals confidence. And I think he's kind of rolling along with it. And he's kind of rolling along with it before even Son left. And I remember Sonny saying when he left, people have got to step up to the plate. And Richie's definitely done that for us. So, the question now is, does Sonny get stuck out on the left when he comes back? But, you know, that's something else we can think of in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that's impressed me with him as much as, I mean, obviously the goal scoring record is superb. And I thought the second goal in particular was very, very well taken. But it's his work rate and his pressing. He's relentless. Absolutely relentless, and it's so important to how we play. And you know, you mentioned Kane, and you know, obviously everyone was kind of concerned about what was happening. But you know, Kane wouldn't be, you know, when I was talking this summer saying, you know, about kind of fits for system and stuff like that, Kane wouldn't be able to run like that, wouldn't be able to press like that for 90 minutes relentlessly. Of course he could score those goals, but you would lose the rest of it. I think the form Richie's in at the moment, I don't think you'd be looking to replace him in the summer. I think he's playing really, really well. And, I don't think you could find a better Ange striker at the moment.
No. I mean, a goal a game is just tremendous. It's not like a goal a game, just, you know, 3-4 games. He's on to 8-9 games or something now. And he, as I say, it's spread the confidence with him, and he doesn't look, and scoring those type of goals the other day is just a hallmark of that. Because the second goal was more special than it looked, I think, because he kind of caressed the ball almost with moved his lower part of his leg. It wasn't like he shifted it and then just done a typical kind of swing. He just really just guided that into the corner with pace and the direction. And, fair play to him. I think why would we replace him? I think he's shown enough form here to warrant to be in the squad for the next season and the foreseeable, really.
And so, he had three other good. Well, he forced a save from Pickford at least three other times in the game. Had three other good chances to score. Could have easily put the game to bed. Do we think we've got a problem with Vic getting roughed up at set pieces now? I mean, that does seem like Everton's tactics for the game did seem to be kick it long and rough him up when they get a chance of it. I don't know. There's been a lot of criticism of Dyche, and I was kind of thinking back to that Ange quote at the beginning. I mean, Dyche could quite easily say, "I'm just copying Pep, mate," couldn't he?
I think, it's a new tactic that's not going to go unnoticed by other teams, is it? Realistically, let's be honest, they've seen people have a bit of success with it. And I mean, trust it to be the old clever clogs, pesky Pep that bloody comes up with the plan in the first place. I mean, I'm sure someone else in his team probably came up with this plan, but I think it makes him look good. But I think the thing I'm slightly worried about is I don't want it to put Vic, because if there's certain situations in the game that every time you know when one's coming, it makes you feel a bit jittery. And Vic's been mentally seems ultra strong since he's been in. He's been such a positive influence on himself and the defence. And I wouldn't want anything that kind of slightly puts a seed of doubt in him during a game, you know, worrying every time there's a free kick or a corner that's going to be swung in. And because his focus has been exemplary, I think. And it's just kind of weird how this has just come out of left field, really. And I thought, oh, no. Because he's not physically the strongest, Vic. He's quite skinny and he's quite beanpole. I think the only bizarre thing in this game was why Everton then stopped doing it in the second half, because he came out with his long arms and grabbed quite a few of the old corners.
I'd assume in training this week that he's going to, you know, when we're playing our 60-minute games, he's going to have Romero or Richie or Dragosan or, you know, someone into his guts every time there's a set piece anywhere near the box, and they're going to be roughing him up and getting him working on it. You'd also assume that, you know, we might be looking at putting someone on whoever's on him. I thought in this game, what, you know, more so than the City goal was that Harrison, who, you know, the one who was doing it in the first half, was making no attempt to play the ball. So for their first goal, he's backing into him and pushing him and makes no attempt to play it. And I do think that's a bit different to both contesting a ball.
Yeah, no, I agree. I changed my... I said in our group, I thought there wasn't enough in it. But thinking about it, if you're a player, and Harrison's obviously quite a small player, if you're then moving into that zone where the keeper is, and the ball's like 3 foot above your head and your keeper's trying to grab it, and you're not even jumping off the ground, then all you can be doing is trying to do something to the keeper to either knock him off balance or that kind of thing. Yeah. And if you bump into him, it's kind of like, well, you're not doing anything within the rules of the game there. You're actually trying to disrupt the keeper and push him off. And, you know, that's... And it's a shame, because in the old days, that would have been a free kick all day long and when the keepers were, like, mega protected. But, yeah, I thought... Do you think... one question I was going to ask you, do you think there's anything to do with... Because I think on corners, do we sort of play sort of zonal in front of... And then yes. And then we mark their best headers of the ball and then the rest of us are
zonal. Is that what's happening? It's zonal in front of the goal and then on the edge of the area is a man marking or kind of mixed system. Most teams play mixed systems now anyway. I think the fact that we're marking zonally might be one of the reasons why we're reluctant to put a man on the person who's on Vic, because effectively you're creating a free man then, aren't you? You know, there could be an advantage to that. So I think that's probably why we've done it. Although early on against Everton, Bentancur was there, certainly for the early ones, and then we did that less. And I think the other problem you've got is if you've got late runners coming in, then that makes it more difficult, doesn't it? If you've got a zonal system and then someone's making a late run to try and disrupt the keeper, then that makes it a bit more difficult. I think we've got to come to terms with it. I think we've got to come to strategies dealing with it. I think there was always going to be a stage this season where a team found a weakness in Vic's game and tried to exploit it. I think that if you're not making an attempt to play the ball, then the keeper deserves a bit more protection. And I think, you know, potentially, if you're trying to jump up to a ball and someone's kind of walking through you, then the risk is that you have a bad fall and you injure yourself. I think about, you know, Lloris dislocating his shoulder at Brighton years ago.
They always say this with strikers when they make a back for a person and then they do that kind of fall over kind of, and you land on the small of your back when someone's, because you basically made their legs go horizontal, haven't you, kind of thing, and they can't, you know. And I think that is quite dangerous. I think you're right. I think the overall evidence against Harrison is like you're just not attempting to get the ball. So any kind of nudge contact or something like that, you're trying to gain some other kind of advantage and basically an unfair advantage, I think, because the keepers should be allowed to do his job, you know, not 100% unhindered, but, you know.
And in open play anywhere else on the field, if you were checking a player when you made no attempt to get the ball, then it would be a foul, wouldn't it? So not easy, not even as if you're trying to treat keepers differently. I think backing into someone like that, apart from at set pieces where there's always a bit of argy-bargy in the box, I think, it wouldn't be allowed. So I think we're agreeing that the refs probably should do a little bit more to protect him. The problem with this is that there's a lack of consistency and different refs will treat it differently, won't they?
Do you think anything was said at half-time by us then? But then Everton would still do whatever they wanted to do. But it's just weird how they then kind of stopped doing that. I couldn't kind of work out why.
Yeah. I mean, Dyche was asked about it in his post-match press conference, and he said that he thought that Harrison probably forgot that he'd been asked to do that. but that kind of contradicted what he'd been claiming earlier on, saying they hadn't done anything different or hadn't set out to try and disrupt Vic. I don't know. I mean, it's always possible the ref had a word with them and said, I've seen what you're doing. I don't want to see that anymore. That's possible, isn't it?
Yeah, and whether the ref was preempted by us saying, well, you know, how did you see that, ref? Because it's cost us a goal, basically. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, unless there was a conversation with the fourth official or something like that. And then, I don't know. I mean, in Ange's presser afterwards, he made comments about, I mean, probably the strongest I think I've heard from him about officials this season, and saying that refs weren't giving it and they were waiting for VAR. Do you think that's fair?
I think, well, we don't want VAR to re-referee the game, but if the ref thinks that VAR's going to do that, then... I mean, they looked at it, didn't they, I think, on VAR for this particular incident. But then the VAR must be thinking as well is that the refs must have, you know, he must have seen enough live to, like, think, well, do we want to get involved with that? Because that and the City one, as I say, it wasn't mega contact, but it was like... But it's because at that point, Harrison and Vicario were almost like on their own. It wasn't like they were crowded out by hundreds of other players. So you kind of think the ref must have a good line of view into that. And I suppose he'd seen what, because I don't think that was necessarily the first corner or anything like that was going
no,
on, was it?
No.
I think.
No.
I mean, fair play to Evan. Their delivery was actually quite good on those corners. He was putting it in a really like painful place for Vicario to have to deal with. But I'm surprised that Ange. I mean, Ange always caveats any mention of VAR he makes by saying he doesn't like it, doesn't he? So
yeah.
So you know, I don't know. He can't have it always, but
I think it's a difficult one because you know, as we already said, some refs will give it, some refs won't. I think you're right that the ref will have seen it. And if the ref has seen it and decided not to give it, then it's very hard to say it's a clear and obvious error because it's part of the game that's officiated inconsistently game to game. It's a subjective opinion. Yeah. And if the ref's seen it, then what are you overturning? Because unless he's missed something or hasn't seen it, then I'm not quite sure where that error could be.
Yeah. Unless like he's got his hand behind his on the blind side and pulling Vicario's shirt down or something. Something like, you know, which the ref just obviously can't see. I mean, obviously his linesman might see it. But that's what I think. I think the ref's pretty much going to read that how he sees it. And then, and like we say, it's subjective. One week you'll get that and another week you won't. And it's no different than, I suppose, I mean, you think of the various parts of the Newcastle-Arsenal goal that time where it looked like, you know, Arsenal defender got pushed in the back before the bloke headed it kind of thing. And that wasn't given. And you could, you know, that looked more physical than what Harrison done. So, yeah, one week to the next, it's a bit different. And I know everyone hates that kind of inconsistency. And that's why I would never be a ref. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've just got to be prepared for both, really, haven't we? And, you know, play the game as it's being officiated and try and, you know, where we think things are being missed, try and point out to the ref and try and get them to get it right or, you know, to look at it next time.
Yep.
What did you think about Maddison? How do you think he played and how do you think his recovery is coming along?
I think he didn't play too bad in this game. I think he was a bit better than in the Brentford game that we'll talk about. But he's coming back. And I think the different thing he does for us, and I think this is a good thing, is he will, I mean, considering he's playing the more advanced kind of centre midfielder, he will drop a load deeper than any of our other advanced centre midfielders normally. You know, if you think if Kulu's playing there or anything like that. Because he just wants to get involved in the game, come and look for it. And I'm hoping that, because you do have, like we were saying earlier about who's available for centre midfield. Someone will probably at some point, we get Gareth to do this, there's probably a grid somewhere showing how many times each of those combinations are played. And we keep thinking, I mean, when has Maddison played with Bentancur? When has, you know, Bentancur played with Saar? And because Saar didn't play last season, but Bentancur did. Maddison only joined this season and then Bentancur's been out. So we keep thinking that it's all just going to be like a happy marriage in the middle there, isn't it? And it might just take a bit of time for everyone to do that. But I think the way Bentancur wants the ball and the way Maddison wants the ball, I think there's some real prospect there as long as I think they're intelligent enough not to get in each other's way and all that kind of thing. And I'm sure we can sort that out on the training ground. But I think there's some joy to be had there. And Maddison, I think he's glad. Well, he looks enthusiastic to be back in that. And I think he's probably in Bentancur's bracket as well, where he's, you know, chomping at the bit to get back. I think Ange said that he's an absolute pain in the arse when he's injured. So, I think he's glad to be there.
I think Bentancur and Maddison, I think the first time they played together must be this last week.
It could well be. And this is what I'm saying. Because you kind of think
Bentancur came back from his injury. It was Villa, wasn't it? It was the game. So, yeah, I don't think they overlapped then.
No.
And then Maddison's, and you know, came on as a sub against City, didn't he? So it's only really the last week or so that he's been playing. So yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that will be the first time they've ever played together. Yeah. And I think Bentancur looks tired at the moment.
Yeah. I don't know whether obviously it was another one where Ange says he was knocking at my door and he wants to help the team. And Ange is kind of like, I mean, you know, I'm sure the science guys, the fitness guys say, he looks like he's okay, but you never know. You know, you can come back too early the other thing to remember is with Bentancur is he was obviously exceptional when he played for us when he joined. And, but the other thing you have to remember is that he's back now, but you have to remember he's playing for a completely different manager in a completely different system. All that good play was in a Conte side where maybe we weren't to and froing up the pitch so much. And, you know, he was in a more kind of controlled possession and he would advance the ball. And you kind of forget that the reason we forget that is because I think we think he's such a smart and clever player that he can adapt to anything. But maybe we're just in the early stages of him getting to grips with
the system,
what Ange wants of him. I mean, the slight thing that contradicts that is he did come back in that Villa game and looked absolutely like really good. So, you know, it's a shame it hasn't happened since then.
Yeah. But, I think all that's right. I think the other mitigation is that he's being shifted between two positions while he's trying to get used to the new style of play. I'm hoping that Sarr and Bissouma coming back will help him because it means that he doesn't have to start every game and we can rest him a bit. The only possible downside to that is Bissouma is meant to have picked up malaria while he's been at AFCON. I mean, he's played since then, and kind of West African fans that I've seen talking about it online seem to think that it might not be too much of an issue because he will have had it before and likely to have some form of immunity to it, and the recovery will be quicker. But yeah, I mean, there's a risk there, isn't there? I think he played 20 odd minutes in their game against Ivory Coast, Mali's game against Ivory Coast, yesterday as we talk. So, and he's played a full 90 in one game since then. So
it'd be interesting to see. Interesting to see the options there and whether any of them need to settle into just one of those positions or whether they can always just be kind of flexible if Bissouma's not there, that, you know, Bentancur can play six and it'd be interesting to know whether they need that or whether, they can show flexibility.
I think there's a handful of players in the squad who are kind of covering two positions. So I think, you know, Bentancur's one of them. I think, you know, Højbjerg has played both the six and the eight as well. Skip has, although he obviously prefers Skipper in the eight position, doesn't he? I think potentially Bissouma could play the eight as well. So you might, you know, there might be options there. It's just that when he was available earlier in the season, there was no one else who was comfortable in playing that deeper role. I think there's a few there. And then, you know, obviously you've got Decky, who's, you know, kind of a right winger and an 8-10 as well. So, yeah, there's definitely a few who can do that.
I think what shocked me in this game was there was periods, especially in the second half, or where I would sort of stop myself and think, what, and this is not derogatory at all, but it's what has Bentancur done in this half? It's almost as though you think, when did he last touch the ball? When did he do anything, do whatever? And I think, I mean, some other players in the team you can say that for, and it's not criticism. It's just the reason it shocks me is because in other games, and like last season, whenever he's like a real, real main character, and he just stands up to be, you know, to carry us and everything. And he's, you know, to have him in the team is one of those players that you would always look up to as one of the main players if you were playing in that team. But it's just might be getting back up to speed. No criticism there whatsoever.
The thing that surprised me about him is that he covered the most ground of any player on the pitch in the first half.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe, again, the transitional nature of the game and where he's playing on the pitch might just mean that he's got to cover a lot of ground.
Yeah, but, he's up and down. Yeah.
But, you know, that's where you want a fully fit Sarr, isn't it? Because he runs for fun. So we dropped 2 points at the end.
Definitely.
We dropped 2 points at the end. How gutting.
Yeah.
And Steph's put a question here about whether we think the subs had an impact on the eventual outcome. He's not here to fight his corner on that now, but
he had a lot to say on that, I think.
Do you want to play devil's advocate and take Steph's position on that?
Oh, I can't really. I thought the subs came so late that, well, obviously Decky and Sarr came on after just an hour, I think, and that was kind of okay. I'm just not sure whether the other subs came on long enough to have an effect. But what I'm saying is they certainly didn't have a negative effect. I didn't really see Hill or Skip do anything particularly. I mean, obviously, it's a change of personnel there.
Yeah.
But you could moan at someone for giving away the free kick that gives them another set piece on the basis that its set piece was their big main weapon. I mean, you're giving them another kind of, you know, you're giving them another artillery shell to bomb into the box there. But no, I mean, I can't really fight that corner too much, I think. I think it's gutting any game where you can see late's gut. I mean, I think they said in commentary, I think we've let in 8 goals after the 90th minute this season. So there might be a story in there somewhere where it's, there's something to look at. And maybe that's what, like, alluding to what I said before, maybe that's some kind of control of games or game management or that kind of thing comes into that, because we tend to play the way we do. And, you know, in Angie's words, we never stop doing that. So, whether you continue playing the way we do, whether that keeps the door slightly open for teams, I'm not saying necessarily in this game because it was a set piece, but, I'm not sure whether you're just giving teams chances right up to the last minute to get back in it. I mean, we get onto the Brentford game and I've felt a bit the same with that one, to be honest. But yeah.
Yeah, I think you could come up with good reasons for all of the subs he made. And I mean, I think it's interesting that is all of the, so all of the kind of, well, midfield and forward players apart from Richarlison were subbed off. So Werner, yeah. Maddison, Johnson, Bentancur and Højbjerg all came off. You know, Werner had been complaining about a knock for about 10 minutes before he came off. Bentancur and Maddison are coming back from injuries. Johnson, wasn't getting a lot from it. And, you'd hope that Decky would help you retain possession, although it didn't work out like that. And, you know, ultimately he was the person who kind of gave away the free kick that led to their goal. And, you know, going to three at the back is something that Ange has done quite a lot recently, late in games. And I think, you know, we'd want Dragosin to get minutes and get used to the league. And I don't think, you know, other than Decky, I don't think any of them really were at fault for that. And no. I don't think any of us would argue with Decky coming on as a sub. So, yeah.
Yep. I suppose the argument is that we've reduced one of the midfielders. So that means, can we not play up the pitch as easily? You know, the outballs are less, and are we inviting them on? Or I suppose they're the arguments. But
what happens is that Porro and Adoghi should move into that position. So arguably you should have more in midfield with them. But
and also if what I'm suggesting is true, where it looks like we're having more defenders, so we're going to sit back more, that's completely against Angie's principles. So he's not doing it for that reason. So he's doing it for probably the reasons you're saying, because people might be tired or need to have some time off, because we are managing, you know, Johnson's come back from injuries and still playing his way in as a new player, and Werner's played little minutes this year for Leipzig, and we got two centre halves coming back from and Madison's coming back, Bentancur's coming back.
And Dragosin to help with the aerial threat, again, makes sense.
Yeah, because the chap they brought on was quite tall, wasn't he, I think?
Yeah. So what do we make of Everton?
I don't know. I'm probably in the boat now where I'm quite, without being too spiteful, I hope they get relegated. I think... Goodison, I don't know, they're always just Everton. They haven't really moved on. It's just like that whole Goodison kind of experience has just been like that for the last God knows how many seasons, where they can get the crowd up and then they always feel like they're either a bit hard done by or something like that, or things are against them. I mean, the whole yellow card corrupt thing is completely embarrassing. I think that's just...
I do as well.
It's so misguided and embarrassing. I mean, what are they saying? They're corrupt. I mean, I think their only angle with the corrupt thing is they think, well, you're not doing it to the big teams, but you're doing it to us kind of thing. But, I mean, do us a favour. If you look at yourself, if you broke the rules and then that's the punishment, then, you know, take it on the chin, really. I mean, they could say, well, that's quite, you know, the penalty's quite harsh. But I think, for the good of the game, I think maybe what the Premier League is trying to show is they've got teeth now, and, you know, and that's probably been reflected in this transfer window where everyone's like completely tightened the belt because they realise they can, you know, step over the financial fair play or whatever it's called now kind of thing. So, but yeah, as them as a club, I mean, it'd be quite embarrassing for them to move into their new stadium in the Championship, but, you know.
I will find it funny if Chelsea and City fans start doing yellow card protests and singing that bloody stupid song every game. Hopefully, when they eventually get punished. I mean, Everton have been jumping up and down on the relegation trapdoor for quite a few seasons now, haven't they? And there's only so many times you can do that and stay up. I mean, I think the side, you know, if it wasn't for the points deduction, though, they'd be sitting quite pretty. And
yeah,
you know,
they'd be doing
I think. You know, results wise, I think they've been having a successful season. And they've got some good players there. It's just makes my eyes bleed watching them. But,
and do you think that's Dyche's fault, or do you think he could do better with the players he's got?
I was really intrigued to see how they do there, because I think he's a smart guy. And, you know, I didn't know with his Burnley side whether, you know, he was cutting his cloth, you know, based on what he was given. And it was a kind of, you know, pragmatic way of keeping them in the Premier League, basically, is your job at Burnley, isn't it? And Everton, he hasn't really changed. You know, he's got far better players at his disposal there, I think, and they're playing very, very similarly. But again, I don't know whether he would say, well, they've had a points deduction, that, you know, he's had to play like that in order to try and get them out of a mess. I don't know. But there's little evidence of him trying to play, you know, alter his game, which was something I was interested to see what he'd do. But yeah.
Yeah, maybe he just defaults to that's kind of, you know, I'm in a dogfight kind of football, really. He just needs to do whatever he can to hook them out of it. But, I mean, we did think that it might be a good, you know, a good year this year for them to take that 10 points deduction, because they'll probably still see themselves clear of the bottom three, because the bottom three looked absolutely terrible. But, like, Luton don't look as terrible anymore.
No. You know what I mean? No, so, it's very tight. It's very tight down there.
It's tight.
Yeah. Right. Come on then. One positive, one negative. 30 seconds.
It's pretty route one, really, I think. Well, like the negative is conceding late. Yeah, but yeah, proper dicey positive negative this is. Right then. No, it's conceding late, and also I don't think we got out of the game because of it. But the positive really is just Richie. Really, that was kind of, I don't want to make the comparisons, but that was Kane-esque kind of game finishing, and we love all that. Gave us the two goals that was definitely going to see us at least not lose the game, I think. And long may it continue for Richie. He's really like, he's really hit his stride now, so that's good.
Cool. I agree with both of those. I was only going to chuck in, us not being able to control games, so. Let's get on to Brentford. What did you think? I mean, I think this is a funny one, isn't it? I mean, how did we play? How did you see us playing in this game?
Well, once again, I think we started well, and we were up against not something similar to Everton, because I think Frank's quite a clever manager in he's good at what he does, but and I think they operated, and what slightly annoyed me is I thought, oh, we probably will be able to control this game because they're playing like a deep block, but they mix that up with doing after a little bit they were then doing kind of quite a high press, and they were then getting some success from that, and we were looking a bit vulnerable to it breaking down, you know, near our goal, and then them transitioning into attack, which obviously came that's how their first goal came about. But overall, and then obviously the magic words must have been said at half time. I'm not quite sure what's going on there. But we came out, and I mean, this is what I say when we went through a domination period where we literally just blew them away and they just didn't know what was going on. And I mean, it's quite weird because Ange said the other day, he goes, like with the Everton game, he said, oh, I think what we needed then really was the third goal. But I was then kind of thinking, well, yeah, we've got the third goal on against Brentford, and it still didn't feel comfortable. I mean, I know the goal we gave away for Udogi was, you know, just an error and that kind of thing that happens. But, it's still moments there where I think right at the end there, they had some close chances. It's real heart in the mouth stuff. And it, once again, it just makes me think even more so in that game. Basically, at 3-1, that game should have been over. And there should be no kind of worries what's going to, you know, how we're going to get to the finish line. And once again, it's control of games. We're still in that kind of two-throwing kind of action with the opposition. And chances do get served up. And sometimes you get lucky and get over the line. And other times you probably get a sucker punch and don't get over the line. But I'm sure we could just do certain periods better where, from a supporter's point of view and from a points on the board point of view, we can get over the line with a little bit more ease, coasting it, maybe.
I mean, I thought the first half was another basketball game in this one. and then that opening kind of 10 minutes of the second half where we just completely blew them away. And it was great to watch. And it was really nice to see Werner and Johnson linking up. And yeah, it just, I mean, Brentford couldn't live with us during that period. And then we dropped off again, didn't we? And I think one of the features of us, kind of, you know, reasonably recently, is that we haven't been able to sustain that kind of pressure when we've had it. And I think, you know, going back to the Everton game, if we had a kind of a period of dominance, but we didn't have that same, we weren't as incisive as we were in that opening period, the second half against Brentford. It was great to watch during that period. And yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't know whether this is something that changes as players come back and we're able to rotate more and we've got a bit more freshness there. I mean, I think the other thing is that, you know, and this is not something typical of Ange. He made two changes at halftime. He brought on Johnson and Højbjerg for Skip and Bentancur. Why do you think he did that? And I mean, I was going to say, did it work? I mean, we've already kind of talked about that kind of opening period of the second half. It did work, didn't it?
Part they played in that, I'm not quite sure whether that was part of working or whether it was more of a case of like Ange just saying, look, just play, and you need to like up the pace. Whether they just by, in essence, being fresh legs, whether that gave us more impetus, I'm not quite sure, because, you know, you take off Bentancur, you're thinking, oh, really? What's he, you know, why are you taking him off? Because obviously we all rate Bentancur so highly. But it worked, but I'm not sure why he did. I think he said afterwards he just did it to just change things, as in, you know, in other words, maybe he felt the game wasn't going the way he wanted it, and he thought a change of personnel was the way to
shake,
sort it, of,
shake them up a bit.
Yeah, that kind of thing, which is, I wouldn't say it's weird, but it's kind of like you're still bringing on a type of player. So just to sort of think that they're kind of just a change is as good as a, you know, as a, yeah. I don't know.
The obvious reasons for me would be that, I mean, Højbjerg is a good kind of disruptor. So if they're having joy on the break, then he's good at stopping that.
Yeah.
And again, if you thought that there was space in behind as they were getting men forward on the counter-attack, then Johnson is good at exploiting that. He must have been reasonably happy with them because they both kept their places for the Everton game.
Yeah.
So the changes in the starting lineup between the two were that he stuck with the side that started the second half against Brentford.
Yeah.
What did you think of Brentford? I mean, I think I kind of agree with you. I think, Frank's got them really well drilled. I think they're one of the best counter-attacking sides in the league. And I think stylistically, they're a difficult match for us. And because they're so good on the counter-attack and because they defend in numbers so well, I think it's a tricky game for us, but that kind of led to that kind of basketball end-to-end stuff again. I think when we were in the first half, we were a bit slow in build-up, weren't we? So once they got into possession, once they got into position, we found it very difficult to break them down. Whereas in the second half, we were just very, very quick with the ball and managed to get in behind them and created chances.
Yeah, I think, it's a lovely story, Brentford, and I've always had a little bit of a soft spot for them, but I don't know if that's like slightly drifting away, because I think they've done really well. They've got a new stadium. They've done really well to get into the G-Tech there. But I think I used to admire them more the way they play. But I don't know if you actually changed the way they played or whether they're just becoming. I think maybe because of the physicalness of them. Sometimes I'm just I'm starting to swing towards they've got slightly what is it, either Dave Bassett or was it Bobby Gould Wimbledon vibes and. And I think that's slightly harsh, but they do seem a bit like, I think they were, I don't know if they're another team that realised that kind of hassling us, niggling us, kind of breaking us from our rhythm is the tactic, which obviously is a tactic, because as I say, if we like to sort of flow, if we like to get into kind of dominating periods of games, the way to do that is to kind of break the game up. And they do seem another team that wants to break the game up, take a long time to do things about whether, I mean, obviously, the other incident in this game was it was slightly disgraceful that Nordsgaard never got another second yellow card. I'm not quite sure how he avoided that, because he did multiple offences where he could have gone off, and that would have made things a lot easier for us, because he's actually quite a he's an important player for them. He gets through a lot of work. They're going to lose Tony, which is a shame for them, because Tony makes the way they play, probably, you know, elevates the way they play in the sense of the style they play. He's a strong target man with actually ability as well. I don't know. And then the whole Mopay thing is, I think you can be horrible to Mopay, but I think he did that once upon a time to Arsenal, I think, didn't he? He had a real kind of like riled them up, and we all kind of liked him then. So because of that, so I think it just depends who he's doing it to be honest. But he was being a bit silly, to be honest. And I think it probably annoyed Ange as well, not particularly Mopay, but just the whole
that we fell for it. And I think,
well, the whole interaction kind of thing, isn't it? The whole kind of, it makes it a little story within the game, and people are like, you know.
I think Ange was disappointed that we were falling for it and we got riled and we allowed it affect our game. And I think, you know, it's interesting, isn't it, that, you know, the Everton game where they were very physical. They weren't shithousing us, were they? They were just very physical, apart from maybe Godfrey's dive when Richie went for a tackle. But Mopay was at it from the very beginning, wasn't he? I mean, he got away with throwing the ball away, all sorts of stuff. I mean, you know, again, he plenty of his shithousing was worthy of a yellow. He ended the game on a yellow. He could have easily walked for half of that stuff. And, I think we're seeing at the moment, and, you know, maybe it's just growing pains for our team. I think teams we're playing know that we're a threat, know that we're good, and they're coming with a plan to try and disrupt us, whether it's shithousing, whether it's kicking us, whatever it is. I mean, we've seen the kind of tactical fouls being a feature of games against us all season. And I think partly we've got to take it as a compliment that teams are setting out to try and stop us. We've got to grow up and not let it affect our game and stick to the plan. And I think we've also got to come up with strategies to cope with it and come out on top. And I'm sure all of those things will happen. It's just at the moment it's a bit frustrating because, you know, it could have cost us in this game. It did cost us against Everton.
Mm.
And, it, you know, it's just something we've got to work through, I think.
I think what teams do, and I think David Moyes said this after when we played West Ham and that, and they obviously luckily beat us, is there a lot of these managers are dead scared of us because when we're in full flow and when we're playing like the kind of dominating periods of games, we are literally almost unplayable. In other words, we really do dominate. And I think Moyes said that in the West when he was talking at our stadium after the game. He says they are honestly the best team we've played, as in when they're attacking and doing that. Mm. It's just almost you can't live with it. And then you think, well, if that's what they're seeing of us on the videos and in the tactic balls and leading up to the game, then it's probably going to lead to some kind of like dirty tactics to try and fragment that and break that up and that. But just going back to Andrew a minute, I think he moans about those kind of things for us, but I think he hates anything that interrupts the flow of the game, because that's why he hates VAR. He hates refs discussing things too much. He hates it even sometimes if we go down injured and we then want the trainer to come on. He hates that. So I think it just interferes with his love of
like free flowing attacking football,
the purest way the game can. Yeah, it's just like, no, just, you know, just like we never stop. So whenever the game stops, he then sort of hits the hump, no matter what the reason is. It's kind of like, I just want to watch everyone play football. That rest of the stuff is just like nonsense. And it kind of rolls him up slightly, I think. But, I suppose he has to, you know, take that to a certain, you know, he has to accept that to a certain level, because that's what, you know, the game's been about for years, really.
Anyway, let's move on. Well, this week it's the month that was, because we're going to look at the transfer window. I know. Before we get into the whole month, let's just see, you know, talk through what's happened since we last recorded. So Lukas Bergvall, we signed him from Swedish club De Garden on Friday for 10 million euros plus add-ons. He's going to remain at De Garden until he links with us up on the 1st of July. He's one of the most coveted young midfielders in Europe, and we beat Barcelona to his signature. But more importantly, how many times have you watched YouTube highlights reel, his highlights reel this week?
Oh, sorry to disappoint, not at all. The only one I watched recently was the Nusa one, which obviously we've done nada with Nusa. He's, you know, nothing's happening with him. He's gone elsewhere. But the good thing about this, though, was, you know, it's Barcelona one week, Bayern Munich another week, all these players that keep sort of jumping, you know, saying nay to them and hello to us. That's a good thing.
Werner picked us over Man United as well. So I think all of our January signings have...
The world is changing. That's what we like to see. I did notice, though, that I think with his I mean, for your 18th birthday, you're getting flown around in like private jets and joining one of the biggest clubs in the world. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, does it? I mean, what a way to arrive. But I did notice this is similar with Dragusin, I think. Is that I think Lukas Bergvall's dad and...
was a player, yes.
And his mum, I think.
Yeah,
or
that's right.
Played professional football as well. And with Dragusin, I think his dad was a national basketball player and his mum was a national volleyball player. And
that's
it made
me
wonder whether that's quite a good profile if you come from a sporting family, because your life as a kid and youngster would have been very much dominated by that and seeing that way of life and the commitments it takes and all that kind of thing. And it just made me wonder whether it sort of makes quite a good part of a player's profile when it comes to just being either sport mad or understanding what the demands and those kind of things are, because you've just seen either your mum and your dad do it, really.
Mm.
And I think that could be like a bit of a benefit. But I've not seen his YouTube highlights, but he's as you say, he's one of the top-rated players in Europe, and it's nice to see. You know, we miss out one week, and then we get another the next week. So he's certainly putting players in the right places when it comes to that 16, 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old age groups, I think.
And he looks ready for first-team football, which 18, you know, having turned 18 last Friday is pretty impressive. You know, he's been playing first-team football at 17 in Sweden. At 16, he was playing second-division football. So, you know, he's got quite a lot of minutes under his belt at a very young age, which I suppose is similar to what we saw with, you know, Pap Sarr and Udogie as well, who were playing first-team football at a very young age. And I just think it's really exciting when you look at the team at the moment, where, you know, Dragosan is, what, 21?
Yeah.
VDV is 22.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, but you know, before we get to the kind of homegrown players we've got coming through, we've got some really exciting young batch of players there as well. There was an interesting quote from Ange where he was talking about, you know, Spurs' difficulty in bringing through academy players over the last few years, and we don't have a production line there.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why we're having to go into the market for young players. And I think he's right about that. But I think there's been quite a few encouraging signs over the last few seasons, which we can get onto later in this section. But do check out his YouTube clip. He looks great. He's really exciting.
The one bit I did see was that, like Nusa, he's very upright balance, and left or right foot doesn't seem to sort of matter him, which is almost like your perfect dream as a player if you can get your skill levels up to, you know, being both footed equally.
He looks like he might be able to play either of the eight roles. I can't pretend to have watched a huge amount of him. I will when the Swedish league starts again next month. But he looks pretty decent. Alejo Veliz has joined Sevilla on loan with no options until the end of the season. Alejo has been back in training recently after recovering from knee injury picked up against Bournemouth. Sevilla are 16th in La Liga and only 1 point above the relegation spots. So you'd assume that they could do some goals and Veliz will get some minutes. Are you excited about Veliz learning at the shoulder of Eric Lamela?
Well, they're both Argentinians, so I think there's certainly a nice few volumes of dark arts to learn from the Lamela there, especially if you want to, Veliz wants to progress to the national team as well. That seems like a prerequisite. But I'm surprised the Sevilla, they're down there. I mean, there's a few teams. I mean, I think Lyon are right. I think they're in the bottom two or three, aren't they, in France? Mm. There's a few, and Ajax were bottom of the league earlier in the year.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's some real sort of surprises this year with what's going on. But it was just a shame with Veliz, really, because he got that injury at almost like the perfect time where he might well have spent January all the way to the end of January with us and got the odd few more minutes, because I mean any opportunity where we would have seen him for a few more minutes would have benefited him. I still think he probably would have gone on loan because we'd probably be expecting Sonny to come back, but and with Richie playing so well as well, but you know, any valuable minutes there before he got sent off would have helped. And you know, not make a decision on him. I think he's going to be hanging around. I think he looks like he's got some promise, Veliz.
He does, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm pleased he's got a loan. I think he needs minutes. I think he needs games. I think he's not got noticeably better with us as the first half of the season has gone on. But with us only being in one competition now, and as you said, with Son, Richie, you know, Werner can play up top. Sure. You know, we played Deki up there before now as well, I think. And Scarlett back and not being able to be loaned out again.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
I think his minutes would have been limited. So, I think this is a really good move.
And hopefully we've targeted Seville because we realise they're in a bit of trouble and maybe they've got scorers that are just, you know, misfiring, and that might give Veliz, you know, at least he'd be tried, if you know what I mean. And so hopefully we've made a good selection there, which I think is something, the loan things we'll go on to in a bit, I think. I think there's a little bit in the chat with that, yeah.
So an odd one, Brian Hill turned down the chance to join Brighton on loan towards the end of the window. He's meant to be happy at Spurs and wants to fight for his place. This one really surprised me. I was kind of surprised that Brighton were in for him, and I was kind of surprised that he turned them down.
Yeah, I can't quite work out who's in Brighton squad and who isn't, because they seem to just kind of marvel up some players sometimes and then all of a sudden they seem to be like first team ready. So I'm not quite sure where they fitted in there, because I suppose is Matoma injured at the moment? Has he not been playing?
He has been, so there must
be something going on. But I don't know. I'm not sure why Brian thinks he's going to stay here and fight for his place, but then he might argue that, you know, I got 10 minutes the other day, so he came on the other day. Because, I mean, I think what probably surprised you was that, because Donnelly got on ahead of him the other day,
Brentford,
didn't he?
Yeah.
So then you thought, well, where does that leave Brian, kind of thing?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
I can't see him being with us next season, but I suppose, you know, it's good that he wants to fight for his place. I think Ange has commented that he's been really good in training. Maybe he just sees it as his chance to pick up a league winner's medal. And if he left now, he might not have had enough appearances to qualify. Maybe that's what it is. And 16-year-old centre-back Luka Vuskovic, who we signed earlier in the season, but has been stuck with Hajduk Split because he's 16 and he can't formally join us until he's 18. Has joined Polish club Radomiak Radom for the rest of the season.
Random Polish club.
Yeah, and he's expected to go out on loan to a higher level next season before joining us up with us in the summer of 2025 once he's turned 18. They're top half of the table in the Polish top flight.
Are they?
So, Hadžić,
although we've signed the thing with him or done something, has Hadžić still got complete control over them at this stage?
I suspect this is us managing his development. He hasn't played too much for their first team this season. He had done before he joined us. I think this is us managing his development. Why would they loan out a player who they don't, you know, isn't going to stay with them long term?
Yeah, because he was playing for them, but like since he's had the agreement with us, he's not playing with them, is he? I don't think they've not picked him. I don't know if they, because they were like slightly bitter about it. I'm not quite sure how that would play it out. I mean, the other thing to think about is obviously we might have a bit of a say, because the other thing we've obviously done for them is like just sent Perisic their way, haven't we? Which, you know, and I think we're probably, and you know, we must be paying some reasonable chunk of wages to do that, I suppose, because I don't think Hadžić can get anywhere near his wages. So, I don't know. Maybe we've got a good relationship with them. So, hopefully that is a good move for him, really.
Right. Shall we have a look at the rest of the month? So, coming in, we had Radu Dragosin, who joined us from Genoa for €25 million. Timo Werner, who joined us from RB Leipzig on loan until the end of the season with an option to buy for €15 million. And, as we just said, Lucas Bergevall, who joined us from De Garden for €10 million. And leaving, Hugo Lloris joined LAFC on a free transfer. Eric Dier went to Bayern Munich on loan, but he's out of contract in the summer, so it's basically a free transfer, more or less. Ivan Perisic, as we just said, joined Hajduk Split on loan, another one who's out of contract in the summer, so we're not going to see him again. Sergio Reguilón returned from a loan at Manchester United, went on loan to Brentford. Jed Spence returned from his loan at Leeds and went on loan with an option to Genoa. Japhet Tanganga returned from Augsburg and joined Millwall on loan. As we just said, Elio Valise joined Sevilla on loan. Ashley Phillips went on loan to Plymouth. Alfie Devine returned from a successful loan at Port Vale and jumped to upper division to join Ash Phillips at Plymouth on loan. And again, as already mentioned, Luka Vucevic has joined Radom on loan from Hajduk Split. Not bad. That's a busy window, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, the thing that stands out there is obviously big wages off the bill. We've got some players that are going to probably boomerang back to us again. And unless they do something amazingly, you know, impressive for their new clubs, some of them, I don't know. I think it's just hard. It's almost like we're trying to get someone to subsidise some of the wages just to take the contract down. Because I think as what we've shown our club has done there, there's not many other clubs that have done anything, really. It seems to have been a big empty room in the transfer tavern, or whatever you want to call it. but it's good that we're looking at the loans, and it's even quite brave to bring someone back from Port Vale, like to bring Alfie Devine back from Port Vale. He's playing regularly there, but we pushed him up a league, and he, you know, at least he's got someone else from our club there that they can support each other. And, it seems like we've got through some good work there, really. I mean, that's how we want things to work, and that's how it looks like it is working.
It'll be interesting to see with that kind of relationship with Plymouth develops anymore and whether we continue to send players there, because, again, you'd assume that we're on pretty good terms. I think one of the things that's impressed me most about this window has been our proactive use of loans, particularly for those kind of young players who have been developed. You know, you mentioned Devine getting recalled from Port Vale and upper division, and, you know, we seem to be managing loans a lot better than we have in the past. Do you agree? Do you think this is a positive development?
I think what you said could be important is it's like developing kind of relationships with some other clubs, I think, sometimes, or people we already know, you know, in the management areas of those clubs or the coaches' side of those clubs that we know we can trust. And I think that's probably what's happened at Plymouth because that chap was with some of the England youth levels, was he?
He was, that's right. He'd managed Devine at England. I can't remember if it was 16s or 17s, but he's known him since before he joined us. So when he was at Wigan before.
Yeah, I think some of that kind of relationship can be quite important sometimes, especially if you kind of, so you can then talk to each other. I mean, the clubs can talk to each other on a level where they're hopefully being honest with each other rather than, you know, because we've had some loans where people have been sent and they're literally just sitting there, or they're not getting chosen, or even hopefully what the scouting and that kind of department is doing is just making sure the loan is as suitable as possible in the sense of the style of play that team he's going to play, and where it looks like they may be weak in that area of the pitch, then he's more likely to get games and those kind of things. You know, just be a bit more thorough about it, hopefully.
I think it's an interesting point you make about kind of relationships with clubs. I hadn't really picked up on it before, but as you said, you know, a couple at Plymouth, Hajduk split with Vuskovic and Perisic, Sevilla with Reguilón has been on loan there before. Obviously we obviously Lamela went there. Terms with Genoa are good enough that we've, you know, they've taken Spence with us. And then obviously Bayern Munich, we've shifted some old kind of knackered old players to them before as well. So
do you think the next step might be to do like one of these kind of, you know, Danish or Belgian feeder club kind of things like Brighton have done? Do you reckon that could be a step we might look at taking?
We were linked with a club a couple of years ago on that, but I haven't heard anything recently. But I think if you've got good relationships with clubs and you kind of share, you know, how you want to develop players and how they're going to play, then I don't think you necessarily need that if you've got a decent network. But it definitely seems to be something that's improved because, you know, particularly with kind of youth development loans, they've been very hit and miss over the last few seasons. I mean, even just bringing Scarlett back from Ipswich, where, you know, he wasn't having the best time, he wasn't really getting the minutes, and we decided to bring him back and have him train with us. Because I don't think that was triggered by Ipswich. I think it was us that triggered it. And I think with Devine, I don't believe we had a break clause in the contract with Port Vale. We had to negotiate that to exit and then join to Plymouth. So, we definitely seem to be a lot more proactive in that than we've been previously. In terms of the kind of the first team signings, do you think we've addressed the priority positions?
I think so, really. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, if other people had expectations, but I think we knew when Sanchez went that would leave us short. But it doesn't necessarily upset me that he went. So I think that was something we were just going to have to swallow. And, you know, fortune didn't favour us when it came to, you know, what happened in the Chelsea game. But I think that gives us a bit more of a, gives us the option there. And it seems like Dragosin can probably play left or right side of that. I think he'd be okay with doing that. He's, you know, and he looks like he's another good fit in the sense of stylistically and physically as well. He's quite imposing, isn't he? Tall lad. Yeah, he's intimidating, tall lad. And hopefully that translates to attacking corners as well as defending corners. And then Werner is just literally on trial for 6 months with a good kind of fee at the end there if you want to, like, take that option, really. And I'm sure he'll get, I don't know. I mean, this goes back to what we were saying earlier about what happens with Son when he comes back. But I was going to say, he definitely looks like he'll get the minutes to prove one way or the other whether we want to exercise that. But, you know, what do you think on coming back, Sonny coming back?
Yeah, Son's starting if he's fit, isn't he? I mean, there's no way that's not happening. So
yeah, but in the left-sided in that left-sided slot when we were kind of thinking, because you can't move Richie now, can you? This is the thing.
No, I don't think you do. I think you probably want to get to a stage where you're picking them for fit for the game, because I think they've got different qualities.
Yeah.
And where Richie is definitely better than Son is where a team are sitting back and it's a crowded box, because Son can get muscled out of those games a bit.
Yeah.
Where there's space in behind to attack, I think maybe Son's the better option. But, you know, Son being club captain, he's going to start every game he's available for, which means that he will be coming in ahead of Werner. But I think, you know, given, I mean, Son's 32 this summer, so we are reaching, you know, if he gets another contract, he's got 1 year left on his contract after this one. If he gets another contract, it's probably his last at the club. You know, he might play until he's, 34, 35, but, you know, we're nearing the end of his career, and we're probably going to have to start managing his minutes soon. Having someone who can come on, you know, 60, 70 minutes after he's given his all is probably exactly what we want. And I'm sure Werner will get to see plenty of game time.
Yeah, I think, like you say, in certain games where it feels like there's going to be quite a lot of transition movement, we've got, I mean, Werner and then Son in the middle and Johnson on the right is kind of speed, isn't it? And, you know, in those kind of games, it's, you know, you'll want to play balls through the gaps for them to run directly onto. You've got three really fast. I mean, admittedly, I think Werner and Johnson fall into the same camp where I think they're just building their kind of confidence and trying to get up to speed and just, you know, and they both look like lads that it might take a little while for them to do that. They're not like, they're not, you know, they're not the Madisons of the world who are just literally like buzzing and full of themselves constantly. I think, you know, they're going to have, and some good moments will encourage that for them. I mean, I think we saw that with Werner getting some assists. That definitely is going to, like, you know, keep a smile on his face. And he's, you know, he's a good lad as well, really. He's great. He's pretty good in the interviews. The same as Johnson, really. That's the thing. So, you know, you wish that it happens for them.
I think probably the other thing with Richie is that, or Richie and Son, is that there might be games where you think that the opposition have got a weak fullback or someone like that, and Richie's physical game might be an asset for us, and you can kind of bully them out of a game, and that's, you know, flipping them around for that reason might make sense, or, you know, switching them in game, which is something we haven't seen too much. But yeah, I think there's scope for both of them. And how do you think all this leaves us for the second half of the season?
I was going to say this earlier, really. I mean, if I can sort of, I think we're right. I always said that it come February, we're now in February, things will start coming together. But if you sort of paint a picture of like converging paths, really, you've got, you've got the injured coming back and the ones that have come back but still going to have to get up to speed. You know, the Madisons, Bentancourt, Van der Vaart and Romero. And then you've got the international returnees. They're going to come back and they'll integrate them slowly. Or, you know, they'll get back up to speed. Mm. And we've still got the new recruits with Dragosin and Werner. And even Johnson's still a new recruit in a way.
Yep.
And, you know, Sars only started playing this season. So what I'm hoping is that all just kind of, you know, those paths converge into something where you kind of think, oh, we've got plenty of players to choose from now, and they're all pushing each other and they're all up to speed a lot more. And that whole fragmented and parts of the season where there's just one obstacle after another just smooths out, really. And I'm hoping that it comes together in a kind of points total that gets us somewhere where, you know, we feel like we've done really well this year. I can see that happening. I mean, I don't think that's, you know, it's not something that's not easily, you know, it's not like far down the track there. I think this just could be happening quite soon now. I think come the, because we're going to have 2 weeks off soon, haven't we, after Wolverhampton?
Yeah, after the Wolves game, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, because we haven't got Chelsea games cancelled. So,
that's right.
Chelsea game?
Yeah, that's right. Chelsea game. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, so hopefully that really will be the point. And that then, so that takes us into March, and I think, maybe.
It does.
Palace,
yeah.
I think. Yeah, probably Palace at home. So I think by then it could, you know, could, fingers crossed, all definitely looking better by then. What about you?
I'm feeling pretty positive. I think the squad's taking shape nicely, and considering, you know, at the end of last season we would have said there was a huge job overhauling the squad. I think the only negative is that there's a lot of players, you know, who are out on loan because we haven't been able to sell them. But, you know, if we're not picking up all of their wages, at least that's a bonus. I think in terms of kind of first and second strength side, I mean, I think Werner's already shown enough for me that I would be looking to pick him up in the summer, because I mean the fee's peanuts, and I think he offers something there. You know, realistically, going into the summer, I think, well, another centre back, strengthening at full back, a good one on one forward would be useful. Yeah, maybe you want to add another midfielder to the mix, but I'm not sure. You know, if Bergvall is a first team player already, Devine's coming back and maybe is a first team player. You know, it looks pretty strong there to me. That doesn't feel like a huge job to do. And the players we're talking about coming in there are understudies, not first team players. What, you know, trying to raise the bar, you know, across the side. And yeah, that feels like a you know, that, and you've got two good players for every position, and it leaves us in a position where we can play in Europe and in the league. And I think, you know, in the rest of this league season, one game a week, you know, as you said, we've got another two games, and then we've got a fortnight off to you know, to reintegrate those players who've been away on international duty and, you know, might need a bit of a rest there. You know, it feels pretty good to me. And obviously, you know, it's a cliche, isn't it? But the players returning from injury is a real bonus as well. I'm really positive about it. I really like the team we're building. And, you know, we might even get to see our first 11 for the first time soon, which is a really exciting prospect.
That would be exciting. Now, that would be exciting. It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing the kind of things we've had to come through. I mean, I suppose in a roundabout way, we are lucky that we didn't, you know, I mean, God knows what would have happened if we were doing like Wednesday, Saturday, or, you know, two games a week constantly. I think it was saying the other, oh no, I was listening to something actually this age ago. I think some teams would like probably might be 8-9 games ahead of us, I think, in the amount of games they've played. But we need that for next year. I mean, I think, I suppose, I don't know whether, I think we just go with the progression we have to, regardless of, because the one thing that could dictate what we need and what we think is just thinking, well, the Champions League is a bigger and a harder competition than, you know, Europa League or Conference League or something like that. So, you know, if you've got some players, but I think Ange doesn't really think like that. He just thinks that, you know, you've got to give everyone a go and give them their chance, and then, and they sink or they swim kind of thing, really. I mean, you don't obviously want to mentally ruin a player or anything like that, but I think we're set up really well, and that's down, hopefully, down the age. I was quite glad that, because Ange got asked that question about the academy and stuff like that, and I'm quite glad he sort of tempered his answer and wasn't like, because obviously they're like smashing it in the under-18s and the under-21s, but he wasn't like, oh, everything's rosy there at all, was he? He was like saying, there's more work to do like that, and we need to get those players, you know, that needs to be a funnel, basically.
And we have to remember the under-21s, that a lot of those players only stepped up from the under-18s.
Yeah.
This is their first season at that level.
Yeah.
Because we had a big clear out in the summer. So, you know, although there's some real talent there, there's a few, you know, it might take a few of them, you know, a while to come through until they're ready. Cheers, Ricky. That was fun. Okay. That's a good place to leave it. So we'll be back next week to chat about our games against Brighton, or our game against Brighton even, and catch up with the latest news. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you then.